relationships, religion, Chris Harrington's reality. This is the good news on Glenn Klein Online.
In store, love is the drug, and I need to score. Showing up, hit them run. Boy meets girl, where the beat goes on. Stitched up tight, can't shake free. Love is the drug, got a hook on me. Oh, catch that buzz. Love is the drug I'm thinking of.
You beautiful humans, this is Glenn Klein. It is Tuesday, two for Tuesday, December 18th, 2012. The only December 18th, 2012 in the history of humanity. And yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen, it is two for Tuesday. We now get to welcome in our better half of the two, Chris Harrington. Yes, each week at this time, well, not necessarily this, well, the time, but we sometimes change the day, we welcome in the intermediator from beautiful Nacogdoches, Texas. Please say hello to Chris Harrington.
All right, good evening.
Did that music get your adrenaline going a little bit?
It did.
So royal, it's so regal, it's so you. So I'm driving in to the studio tonight. Got the classic vinyl on the Sirius XM satellite radio, right?
Yeah.
And what song comes on?
No way.
Love is the Drug.
Is that right?
By Roxy Music.
Yeah.
I'm so glad I put no spiritual significance to that, I must tell you.
I am so glad.
But I did chuckle, of course, because the theme song of this here radio program came on. And and this thought crossed my mind. Oh, good, I can practice. And so guess what I did?
You scored.
I practiced. This is Glenn Klein Online. Sean O'Halloran is in studio, or Tuesday night edition tonight. If you're listening on the archive, which we know most of you folks do, it makes no difference to you, except you could listen to it a little earlier if you wanted. But Sean is ready to take your call at 1-800-436-3260. Feel free to dive in on the conversation if you have any questions or comments. 1-800-436-3260. And that's a toll-free in North America. 813-425-5773 is the number. I sound really nasal, don't I?
I don't know. I wouldn't say so.
I think I need
Really.
I think I need a Kleenex. I think I need to blow my nose, Sean. Can you make that happen? Anyway, 813-425-5773 is the number worldwide. If you happen to be listening on Tuesday evening, and it's just a little after 9 o'clock, you can call in, too, to talk to the intermediator, who is on the mend. We're happy to report that...
on the mend. I'm on the meds.
You're on the meds and the mend. A week ago, we had Mr. Greg Ambergy sitting in this very studio. Before the Big 12 event the next day, and you were preparing to have surgery in beautiful Houston, Texas.
Man, I was down for the count. I went in and had I had some big time major shoulder surgery. I had my rotator cuff reassembled.
Now, for those of you guys that did not hear the story from a couple of weeks ago, when Chris took a tumble on his bicycle over the handlebars, the bike came out unscathed, didn't it?
It did. I don't think there's a scratch on it.
But you did not. Did you have a helmet on?
I had a helmet on.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, I had gloves. I had everything. The only thing that wasn't covered was my shoulder.
And you just, what did you end up, did you hit the ground, or what did you end up
hitting? I went directly to the ground. I hit an embankment that about 30 degrees was made out of solid clay. It's like hitting concrete.
Yeah, that wasn't too pleasant.
Nah, it wasn't. But, you know, at the time I didn't think much of it, because I thought, on the way down I even thought, you know, this is so silly. I'm falling off my bicycle. What a goof, you know. And then when I hit, I went, dude, that was really painful. I'll just dust myself off and we'll continue ahead. And then I stood up and I went, wow, I'm in shock. I need to head to the house before this wears off and I can't do anything. Which, as it was, ended up being exactly what happened.
Within
an hour and a half, I was incapacitated.
You recognize you were in shock?
Yeah, I knew that I was, because I was elated that I was in pain. This is really crazy.
That's one of the signs, one of the symptoms of being in shock. You're elated, you're in pain.
Yeah, you know, it's okay. You know, your endorphins all kick in and everything's cool, and you're just grooving through it. You know, yeah. Whatever, you know. I've been there before. Actually, I was in a car wreck one time. And I had a punctured lung, and I had that same thing. I stood up and took care of a friend of mine, and they got her into the ambulance, and the guy said, well, there she goes. And I went, yep, and I fell straight over.
So how far were you from your house? Did you get back on your bike?
Yeah, I got back on the bike, and I drove the extra, I think it was about maybe 2 miles back to the house.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I just kind of pedaled it over there. It wasn't any big deal.
Yeah, and then, yeah, 2 miles when you're in shock.
Yeah.
And then how long till, like, was Glenda home? What happened?
No, I was at my brother's house, and I was hanging out with his kids. So I didn't even go home that night. I was supposed to go home that night, but I couldn't make it. And then the next day I did go home, but it was driving like I was totally winged, you know. It was, there was no way I could actually, you know. It was a big risk just to drive home the next day.
Did they take you to the doctor at your brother's?
No, we didn't think it was that. We just thought it was, like, seriously bruised. And then I went through a week of denial where I went to the physiotherapist twice, and he says, gosh, you know, this is not really getting well. Maybe you should have an MRI. And I said, God, MRI, that sounds so serious, you know. Why so serious, you know? And anyway, he said, well, just, you know, do yourself a favor and find out, whatever. So I went to my favorite orthopedic surgeon, and I said, yeah, I got this little thing here, and, you know, whatever. And I said, then maybe you should take a look at it. So he took an x-ray in office. You know, he says, dude, you need an MRI. So he sent me next door, and then he said, oh, well, your tendon is severed. It's not going to grow back. There's nothing to grow back to. They're not joined. There's a separation.
Yeah.
It's split. So anyway, he named somebody who's a super-duper specialist, Dr. Gartzman, down in Houston, and the guy was like, had a really good sense of humor about it. He walks in, he says, well, you sure messed up your shoulder, didn't you? Kind of like, you know. So I said, what, on a scale of 1 to 10, is it like about an 8? He said, nah, maybe worse, you know, whatever.
And so the surgery was on what, on Wednesday?
Yeah, I think so. I'm trying to think. Seems like it. No, it was on Thursday.
It was on Thursday, that's right.
Yeah, he operates on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
All right, so this is Tuesday, and
yeah.
And you are on some medication for the discomfort and pain?
Yeah.
What did he end up doing for you?
Or to you? Yeah, well, he said, I'm going to do a bunch of stuff while I'm there. I want to make sure you get your money's worth. He was really a barrel of laughs. And he reattached the major tendon that I had split, and then also I had pretty much destroyed my bicep tendon, so he had to rework that, re-engineer it. It was about 5 different things that he ended up doing.
How long were you under the knife?
It was an hour and a half of surgery, and it took me about 3 hours to get a room, and then I was there overnight, and so then the next evening I was home already.
Well, before the surgery,
yeah.
You talked about having to reinvent yourself.
Yeah, big time.
And this has not been, I mean, for a guy that spends pretty much his life before a keyboard and talking to people and writing. I mean, you said you wrote...
Well, it was 42 years of racquetball. I'm right-handed.
Racquetball, yes.
Yeah.
And as you said, you were at the peak of your physical shape for like the last 20 years right before this happened.
Yeah, right. I just had lost a pile of weight and had really gained some good muscle, and I was really feeling good about myself. And it was like, you know, this is a seriously very small thing that happened that ended up being a really huge issue.
So how are you doing with it?
I'm working through, you know, I've got the subject matter in front of me that I'm having to deal with. In fact, I'm dealing with the concept of subject matters right now. It's one of the things I want to talk about tonight. But, you know, if you do one thing and you depend on that, and that's your life, your livelihood, your sense of well-being, your identity, and that goes out, are you done? So, you know, my way of thinking is, well, you know, I can be left-handed. I could switch to another sport. I also play harmonica, and I don't have to have both hands to do that. So, I mean, there are lots of other things to do, and I'm not giving up. And the guy is saying he put in 3 titanium screws and 3 plastic screws. He said, look, in a year, you can start working out again, and within 2 years, you'll be back, you know, pretty close to 100%. You won't even really know you did it.
So it's really, what he's talking about is a 2-year recuperation period.
Yeah, it's a 2-year recuperation, yeah.
How do you feel about that?
Well, it's not my first choice. You know, my first choice is a coconut drink on the beach in Maui, but that's not happening. So my second choice is to work through my recovery and in the meantime work on those other things in my life that are also meaningful and not just cantilever my entire selfhood off of the use of my right arm.
Now, a lot of people would want to, they hear 2 years and they're like, 2 years, I can get that down to 14 months. But when you
no,
are recovering
the
like
problem,
that.
The problem with that, and I talked to the doctor about that, I am an ace when it comes to recovery.
Yeah.
I like to get there quickly and go at it, and I'm right at it. He said that will work against me because the attachment for a tendon doesn't grow any faster no matter what you do to it.
That's what I
so
was going to say.
So if you put pressure on it before it's ready, it'll just snap and your whole recovery will be down the drain.
Yeah, certain recoveries have to take as long as they have to take, and you can't rush them.
There's no rushing this one. This one is a 2-year program, and that's how it is.
Right, and
he says there's no guarantee about that. He said, look, I'm a genius. I did a great job. Now it's up to you to be a genius, and you recover well.
Did he really say that?
Yeah.
Does he know that you're a genius too?
Well, that's yet to be proven.
All
I
right,
haven't
so,
gotten my recovery under my belt yet.
Yeah,
I mean,
well,
I'm 5 or 6 days in.
Even if you didn't recover, you're still a freaking genius, dude.
Well, I appreciate that.
And you know,
I'll put that in my scrapbook.
You know how I know you're a genius?
Uh-uh.
Because sometimes you are so amazingly unrelatable. I mean, it's just...
So the more incomprehensible you are, the more likely you are to be a genius.
Exactly right. That's exactly right.
I love that.
Yeah, it's like
I must be out of this world.
No, you are.
People look at me
you
like
are.
I am making no sense at
no,
all.
No, you know, you are. And it's, you know, I'm not a dumb man. You know, I may be stupid, but I'm not dumb.
I hear that.
And, dude, sometimes my head just goes tilt. And then, but I do have a level of chutzpah to just keep pressing and say, well, wait a minute, what do you mean by that? Are you telling me you're drawing an analogy from this to this?
Yeah.
All right. So, but what you said before this surgery, the last time you were on the show, was that you were going to have to reinvent yourself. And of course, you've been a huge proponent of people taking that challenge. Certainly, that's what I'm in the process of
doing
right now. All right. So. What is
this
it?
This is where the rubber hits the road.
Right,
you're right.
Right. So what is it about when people, whether they be in their individual lives or they're in their interpersonal relationships or on a broader scale like you and I, you know, webcasting and broadcasting to the world, take a stand on a particular issue, it seems like almost automatically that it's right. Do you think that we're teaching on it and thinking about it and contemplating it? Because in actuality, we have to deal with it. We have to deal with it anyway, but it seems like it comes back to haunt us.
So I don't believe in haunting because I don't believe in ghosts. So your analysis there holds water only in that it has like a sort of social meaning to me. It doesn't.
Right.
It doesn't
well, I was just using
end of it, but I'll go for it.
I was just using a term. I didn't mean that it involved ghosts.
And another friend of mine said, whenever you tell the universe that you want to do something, the universe will say, "Oh, really?" And it'll like 8 or 10 different ways go, "I don't believe you." Okay.
All right.
And then there's you have also the concepts, you know, of karma and stuff like that. So I want to say that there's, you know, happen chance and coinkydink and karma and all these different things. I think that if you look at the trillions of possibilities in the world, though, the chance that there's going to be some overlap somewhere is it's inevitable. And so what people say is, oh, see, overlap, that means that you can spiritualize this. And I
right.
think that every time you do that, you always get in major trouble. It's just merely the rain falls
right.
on the just and the unjust.
Right.
Not that I'm just, all right?
No, you are just, of course you're
yeah,
just.
Yeah, not that I'm just or unjust, but mainly the point is that the rain falls on everybody.
Right.
So instead of capitalizing on I must be just because the rain falls on me, I want to look at the reality of the situation. Regardless of who you are, it's going to rain. So I'm not taking this personally. God's not punishing me because I
or how about this or
certain kind of poetry or whatnot.
Right? Or how about God didn't bless you either by not killing you on that bike that you're dealing with just a soldier or a shoulder
yeah.
a shoulder.
The doctor said I was very fortunate. He
yeah.
said if I hadn't been so I'm almost 60, so he said if I hadn't been so muscular that I might have crushed my rib cage.
Right. So
it could have been way worse. Yeah,
exactly.
You know?
Exactly. Right.
So. He was very thankful that I had actually taken the time to get in better shape for my age because it could have been something that was much more harrowing than it was.
Right. Now, back in the Christianity days, we would have said that the Holy Spirit had prompted you to get in shape, knowing
yeah.
that the accident was coming. And even though it was a bad accident, you were still protected
right.
because it could have been so much worse.
And the problem with cantilever and all that is, why didn't God warn me ahead of time? Is he punishing me for this?
Right, which kind of does.
Instead of buying into all that stuff, I just simply say, this is an opportunity that in life for me to apply the things that I teach.
Which is awesome. And we're going to get into Chris's teaching momentarily.
Yeah.
But I want to dovetail your situation, which was
sure.
you know, a fairly significant little event in your life, no doubt, to what happened the day after you came out of surgery in Newtown, Connecticut at the school there where the 20
right.
children were killed and the 6 teachers were killed.
Right.
And there's so much religiosity and philosophy and perspective
Absolutely.
that is aired over our televisions and radios
right.
when something like this happens. And again, this is a bad shoulder injury is bad enough, but
True.
But it can't be any worse for a parent to have their kid massacred, you know, in kindergarten or first grade at school. I mean, it doesn't get any worse than that.
I agree with you.
All right, so. Now, the interesting thing, and you know, this is good news, you guys, whether we're talking about the work that Chris and I are doing or just these general topics, we're coming to, if not solutions, at least really kind of probing thoughts and things that should bring a level of cleansing to your soul, if you will, or salvation, some stability to this thing called life. And so on the day that the shootings happened in Connecticut, I believe I read in Chicago there were 10 murders, none of them which got reported on, of course, nationally
right.
for sure. Locally, I'm sure they were in Chicago, being the good Chicago boy that I am. You know what they used to say in J school, right, in journalism school? If it bleeds, it leads. And
yeah.
so they always report on that stuff. But it's certainly the 10 people that were murdered in Chicago that day did not get the national news that
right.
this did.
Right.
So... Now, as horrible as it is, it's no better for the single parent out in Chicago that lost a kid to a drive-by shooting than it is.
Right.
But here are these people, Chris, in Connecticut, and when there are nationally highlighted tragedies like this, get massive amounts of attention.
Right.
And as an outsider, not directly involved with a national tragedy like that, even 9/11, I mean, obviously we were all impacted by that on some level, but not necessarily directly.
Right.
How do you deal with tragedy? And what's the best perspective? You know, I've had a number of people recently in my life say that if their kid died, that they would not be able to go on. And I didn't say this to them, but I said, I really think that I could go on. I would hate it. It would be the worst. It would suck big time. But the only reason I think that I could is because other people have.
Yeah.
So when somebody goes through that kind or is contemplating the potential for that kind of tragedy, how do you deal with that?
You know, this is a case where no matter what you say, you're going to frustrate or anger somebody. No, it won't matter because people are hurting and they want justice and they want things that are impossible, like they want their children back. They, you know, there's nothing that you can actually say it's going to fix anything here. But you're asking me how I deal with these things, and that's a different question. And what I have to do is go back to, like, the first or second meeting that we were having here online, and it has to do with the difference between reacting and responding. My freedom to operate in the moment has to do with my ability to respond to something. If somebody kills my child or my mate or somebody in my family, if I react to that, those people have not only injured this person that's important in my life, now they ostensibly have also injured me. So their bullet is ricocheted from person to person to person. They get to do more damage, and that might be their point. How much emotional damage? Physical damage, yes, but also emotional damage can I do? And for me, the emotional damage is, if not mitigated, it's at least lessened by my knowing that my responding to that is going to be my healthiest position. And I can give examples of that. There are many, many different people who have had horrendous things happen where their children got killed by a drunk driver, and how they respond to that is by creating a foundation to work against drunk drivers. They do something that is proactive to make sure that things are fixed. Now, of course, one of the things that happens is they politicize all this and they turn it into a thing about whether or not we should have more gun control. And then they pontificate about all that stuff. And Westboro Church will drag themselves out and they'll say this is God, you know, being punishing us for X, Y, and Z thing that we have or have not done. And everybody does that kind of a thing. But those reactionaries and the people that are motivated by creating reactions, those are not people that are they're creating things that are important to me. My end game, my most sensitive position, my healthiest position is to be responsive. So how can I be of assistance to those families that lost a child? How can I support them in their efforts to regain their footing? How can I look at the situation and ensure that things are recoverable in the sense that maybe they're not as likely to happen again? Certainly, after Columbine, school districts around the state as well as around the nation started to listen a lot more to those kids who were disenfranchised, and there have been many bullying campaigns after the number of kids that have committed suicide, and now we're starting at the national level to really pay attention to the soldiers, since so many more soldiers are committing suicide some months than people who are actually killed in action. So the horror is that things happen. The worst horror would be that we do nothing about it and that we don't recover our footing and that we don't respond, but in, instead we just react. And in that way, we don't gain our health, and we're unbalanced, and we lose traction, and
we
add to the massacre.
As the response, as we've seen the response after the shootings, you can really differentiate watching the media between people that are reacting and are responding.
Sure, absolutely.
It's really fascinating now knowing this and what a difference it is.
Right.
So I'll tell you one thing you shouldn't do, folks. You should not do like this priest I saw on the news. Twin boy was killed. His twin sister was in another classroom. And in comforting her, this guy was being interviewed. I saw it yesterday, this priest. He said that her brother was in a better place.
Right.
He said that, yes, she would always have the fond memories of him, but that she would make new friends. Because she said that, you know, he was her best friend. And they were apparently were inseparable, literally, from birth. And, you guys, I don't care if you're 6 years old or 60 years old or 75. It doesn't make a difference how old you are. When you're suffering like that, you don't want to hear that it's going to get better. You don't. You talk about being in shock. Here's what I stumbled onto this, Chris. If you've got a personal situation where what can you say to somebody that is suffering like that? That's lost a loved one. That is dying of cancer. To say I'm going to be praying for you, or that you're in my thoughts and prayers. I stumbled onto this, Chris, and it is the most powerful words that I have ever. People have made significant note about, not in a way that I was looking for. I just tell them, you know what, this sucks. Period.
Yeah.
And a good friend of my brother Jimmy's, his brother died, and he drowned in a swimming pool. A grown man, three children, very successful, and a fairly prominent family in Chicago.
Right.
And I knew there would be a lot of outpouring, and I just messaged him on Facebook, and I said, "Bro, what happened to your brother sucks. Lots of love coming your way." That's it. That's all I said. Now, he probably, that guy that died probably had, you know, 1,000, 1,500 people at his funeral.
Sure.
My brother saw his friend, the one that, I'm an acquaintance of his.
Sure.
And he was going through, you know, the condolence line.
Right.
And the guy said to my brother, Jimmy, he said, your brother gets it.
Yeah.
And I could tell you guys other stories. I won't take the time, but there's something about just agreeing with the situation. I have found in my life, you guys, that when you receive the truth, whatever the truth is, like, it does suck. And if you can hear that from somebody else and you receive the truth, it causes forward motion. Even if forward motion is just taking your next breath and not putting a gun in your mouth or taking a bunch of pills or whatever, there is something about hearing the truth. It's, dude, if your kid dies in a school shooting, if your kid dies in any way, shape, or form, that sucks. When you're diagnosed with cancer, that sucks.
Yeah.
And people have responded. There was a woman in my networking group here in Tampa whose daughter died recently. I think she committed suicide. You know, that was kind of the whispers. It wasn't confirmed, but whatever. Her daughter died. And I sent her a card, and I said, this sucks. And she saw the woman that I represent for this company. And you know what she said, Chris? She said, that card meant so much to me. Do you know what kind of outpouring this woman had in this community when her daughter died? But she made note of the fact that I just told her, yeah, this sucks. And for some reason, it made her laugh.
Yeah.
You guys, it's not God picking some kids to protect and some kids to let die, or some people, some soldiers. This is where you get into the why me. People feel guilty that it didn't happen to them, and then they feel that somehow they were particularly picked out to be punished by God.
Right.
neither is true. You guys, this is not a divine plan of vengeance and rewards. And no, this that is the God that has been promoted by religion. It is really, really unhealthy to think that way. God is no more involved in the shooting that, and you know, you guys know I believe in God. I believe in a creator. God is no more involved in the shooting in Newtown, Connecticut, than he is in deciding tomorrow if he's going to keep the earth on its axis. Even your most staunch fundamentalist Christian prayer warrior does not get up any morning and say, God, oh, please keep the earth rotating on its axis. Oh, God, by your mercy. No, why? Because it's done. Something happened 2,000 years ago at the sacrifice at Golgotha. The last words that Yeshua said, that Christ said, was, it is finished. The way that we read in the Old Testament that God dealt with the earth finished that day, you guys. He's at Sabbath rest.
Well, I find that really interesting that what'll happen is that we remember these things under certain circumstances. And yet, we say to ourselves, I'll never forget this idea. I'll never forget this phrase. I'll never forget this word, you know? And so if you look at what they mean by that, what people in general, not just other people, but us, you and me and everybody else, we say that there's a subject matter that we're always going to remember, all right? We're always going to remember this.
Are you segueing into the topic now?
Yeah, I am. But I think that it really goes along with this. You know, we think that, we intellectualize that if we're in that same position, we're going to be able to do it. Like, I know a lot of people who are, you know, when they meet a situation like this, they go, oh, you'll get over it. You know, time wounds all heals or something. They come up with some really slick
time heals all and, wounds, dude.
Yeah, and they, you know, they slap you on the back and they say, just kind of get over it. You know, win for the gift.
You know, you know the most horrible thing the most horrible thing that a person can say to somebody that just lost a young child that has multiple children is, well, thank God you've got the other two.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, you guys.
Yeah.
That doesn't, I mean, there's some logic to that, but Jesus. Chris, we're going to take our break, and then when
sure.
we come back, we're going to get right into the subject
All right,
matter.
I love it.
The subject matter of the subject.
Yeah.
As we continue right here.
You bet.
The good news on Glenn Klein Online. Stones. Good news on Glenn Klein Online is brought to you in part by the Guru of Gratitude.com. The Guru of Gratitude, get paid being nice. Call toll free 888-493-7482. The Guru of Gratitude.com.
Let me please introduce myself.
the Rolling Stones are going to tour again. What did you say?
Five times.
You've seen the Rolling Stones five times?
Yeah, man.
I've never seen them.
Oh, yeah. I saw them in the Astrodome one time. They were awesome. I was like 30 feet from the stage.
Those guys have never had to reinvent themselves.
They have reinvented themselves a zillion times.
I know, right? Remember during the disco phase, they did a disco song? That was a good song, too. Was it Shake Me Up? Shake Me Up. Don't Start Me Up.
All right, start you ready?
Take it away, intermediator.
Okay, so I'm going to use myself as a subject in terms of, reinvention here because it's fresh on my mind and I'm sitting right there looking at it. So I'll use myself as a guinea pig.
Because you have to reinvent yourself at this
time. I got to do it. So I'm going to show you the process. So day before yesterday, I'm thinking, okay, I need to get my head straight. I've got to get the subject matter in mind and I got to figure out what it is that's most likely to knock me off and what's likely to put me in position, right? So I start making this list of things that are not the subject. So off-topic ideas would be things like vices, seduction, con jobs, addiction, pride, a lack of confidence, inconvenience or convenience, anger, mental illness, energy, resources, dogmas, doctrines, vanity, illness, insecurity, ignorance, subtlety, envy, shyness, trauma, impatience, accident, identity, loss, exceptions, logic, self-consciousness, subconsciousness, expectations, desires. I'm looking at different facets of all those different things. I'm saying these things are not the subject matter.
They're not the subject. You could probably put pity on that list.
Yeah, you could put everything on there. Okay?
You could put everything on there.
Everything on there.
Except for the subject matter.
Except for the subject matter. I'm thinking, okay, so what the heck is it? I'm feeling like Gallagher all of a sudden, What the heck is it? And he's got the big hammer, and then he smashes the watermelon, and he shows you the hammer what it is, right? So I'm thinking, okay, what is it? So I start looking through my resources. One of them is the Bible, and I look at the very first commandment, and it says you're not supposed to have any other god but God, right?
Right.
It's just God. Just think about God. If you got God in your mind, then you're there. That's commandment number one.
Now, just make sure you guys understand that Chris is not advocating that.
Yeah, I'm not advocating that. I'm just saying let's use it as an
example.
You're right.
So all right. Fair enough.
This is like the whole concept of don't think about a monkey on your back. So if you're supposed to be thinking about God, then anything other than God is not thinking about God. Therefore, it's off topic, right?
Right. In other words,
or if you want to use love, or you want to use peace, or you want to use your relationship, or you want to use your job, or whatever it is, but let's use the concept of God for a second, right? So that if it's about God, then anything that's not God, that's off topic.
Right. And what we learned from that commandment that it's not possible if you're going to get your sense of well-being or your sense of holiness from following commandments, whether they are from the Old Testament or that they are imposed on by your own consciences.
Yeah.
It's not healthy. If you're going to find your well-being, though, we have learned through the intermediator, ladies and gentlemen, that there is a difference between emotional well-being and effectiveness. You could actually be emotionally well and not be effective from the practical standpoint of what we've been dealing with on this program for all these many weeks and even months now. So, young man, what is the subject at hand? What is the thing that you decided would have to stay off that list that is the subject
at hand? Well, I finally, at the end of the day, okay, I finally came to a point where I figured out what it was, and I understood it, and I decided I needed to sleep on it. But the deal is when I went to sleep, I had a pile of this certain painkiller drug, hydrocortisone, and then I had a muscle relaxer. And when I woke up in the morning, okay, it was like I had had some sort of a brain seizure, and I couldn't remember what the answer to the question was. In fact, I couldn't even formulate the question. I had it written down in front of me because I did it on my little computer over here, and I printed the paper out, and I put it down there, and it says, staying on the subject and dealing with exceptions, and I had the whole thing. The actual subject is, and then there's a blank, and I knew it goes in the blank, but then I couldn't remember.
Really?
And I'm like, oh, I'm so totally screwed. Now
You typed everything down but the actual subject?
Yeah, but the actual answer. So, and the thing is I was having like something that was more like a stroke where my brain was like 3/4 or 8/9 or something turned off, and I couldn't get it to work. And I thought, now who am I going to talk to about this that's going to understand me? If I call somebody up and say, what is it I'm supposed to remember, they're going to say, you're crazy, right?
Right.
Okay, so I've got this friend of mine who's a nurse, and she is a critical care nurse up in another state up north. And so I get her on my email page, and I start emailing her these extremely cryptic letters, like I'm an amnesia victim, and I don't know who I am, but I'm trying to think of this thing, and it's really kind of got me, and I don't know what to do. And obviously, my name is there because it broadcasts your name every time you send a note. So she knows that it's my name, and she answers me back, and I can see her name is there. And she starts messing with me because she thinks I'm having, like, some kind of a freaky moment, right? And at first, she's, like, really kind of playing with me because she's, like, you're messing with me, right? And I'm like, dude, if I knew what I was doing, I wouldn't have to be talking to you about this because I don't know where I am. I've got like amnesia or something, and I can't wake up. I can't get my brain going.
Now you knew who she was.
I knew who she was.
You didn't really have amnesia.
I didn't really know who she was any more than to say that I knew that she was a person who'd be able to field my questions.
You didn't know the details of her life that you knew before?
No, I couldn't pull it all together. All I knew is that this is a resource that if I tapped on it, I could get somewhere.
When was this?
Huh?
When was this?
It was yesterday? Yeah. I'm telling you, day before yesterday, I had the answer sitting right there.
Dude, I talked to you a day before yesterday.
I woke up the next day, and I was having like a fugue.
I talked to you a day before yesterday. You were you. So you're telling
me that's right.
This
day before yesterday, I was.
And so
talk to me yesterday?
No.
You know why? I blocked out everybody but her because she was the only person who was really capable of communicating to me.
All right, continue.
Okay, so here we go. I'm like all during the day, I'm going at it. Okay, so finally in the mid-afternoon, she's been going at me like a jackhammer all day long. And I have a breakthrough, and I remember what it is. There's something that she says breaks through, and all of a sudden I started talking to her, and she goes, uh-oh, intelligent Chris. That's her letter to me. Uh-oh, intelligent Chris. I can see that the drugs have worn off. And I said, no, that's not it. It's not that the drugs wore off. It's that I had a breakthrough, and now I remember who I am. My amnesia is over. She says, I'm nuts because I was just enjoying that guy. He was lots of fun. Can you pop some more pills? She's kind of messing with me.
That is
and
not,
I said, no, I can't
right.
do that because I'm just now getting my feet back on the ground. About that time, okay, I finally get it figured out. I know what it is. Glenda shows up. My wife shows up at the house, and she says, you are a mess. You need to take a shower. So I get in the shower, and I'll get all washed off.
That must be a lot of fun right
now. Listen. I'm going to tell you about a lot of fun. I get out of the shower, okay, and the air conditioner's been on all day, and I had a hot shower, and I get out of the air conditioner, and I'm still in this phase of not really totally being able to communicate, but at least I have in my mind what it is that I need to do. I haven't quite come to yet, so I'm not as communicative as I'd like to be. So she says, how are you doing? And I try to answer her, but I'm freezing cold. And I go,
broke out.
And she says, what?
You broke out of some tongues. That's what you did.
I was freezing. It was so cold in the house. All I had was I could shiver and talk, but I couldn't make any sense of it. And so I like that. And so she busts out laughing.
Yeah, it's funny.
And I'm like, why are you laughing at me? But I said, instead of why are you laughing at me, I said, and she busts out laughing even more. And then I realize what she's laughing at, and I start busting out laughing.
Oh my God, dude.
All right, you know what we're laughing about?
It's funny.
I'm talking in tongues.
You were talking in tongues. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, so it's like, that, and that bred through to now I could communicate. So first we had to get at the blow dryer, and we had to warm me up enough so that I could actually talk without shivering, and then I could communicate for the first time all day.
Like yourself.
Yeah, like myself.
Yeah.
So that I wasn't like totally toasted, okay? So then by that time it's like 8:30, 9 o'clock. I get a little something to eat. I'm now like totally, I was whipped. I mean totally exhausted. So she gets me all wrapped up. I have to sleep in this Barca lounger because I have to sit in a place where I can't roll over because my arm is in a sling that is Velcroed to my chest.
Yeah.
Because I can't move my arm because that'll screw up my surgery.
Right.
It's very delicate surgery. So I have to sleep in this Barca lounger, and I've got my feet propped up on an ottoman, and I've got this Barca lounger, and it leans back. Okay?
Right.
So remember, it's still cold in the house. So I go to sleep, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock. I wake up, and it's like 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the morning, okay? I wake up, and what do you think I see?
I have no idea.
Above me is my feet because I have, in the middle of the night, been shivering so hard that I contract my legs and put them into the chair with me, and all of the weight is on the back of the chair, and therefore it dips all the way backwards and hits the floor.
Dude, you the chair fell over with you in it?
The chair fell over backwards. Okay? So I wake up, and I've got my feet up above me. I've got, luckily, my arm is in a sling because otherwise I'd have been spilled out all over the floor. My head missed the leg of the piano by about 4 or 5 inches. It's lucky I didn't smash my head open on the concrete floors that we have. And so then I start saying in as loud a voice as I can get together, help me. Okay, so like 25 help me's. So then finally I whistle really, really loud. And in the meantime, she says she's dreaming that I'm asking for help.
Well, that would make
and
sense.
And I whistle. And she wakes up, and I say, help me. She says, oh, my God. And she comes in there, and she sees me, and she busts out laughing because I'm upside down, and I'm on the floor, and my feet are dangling straight up in the air, and my head's down, and the chair is sideways. It looks like I'm in a rocket ship heading for the moon.
I'm so glad that Glenda is being entertained through your misery. That's, well, you know, there's a positive right there, you guys.
What do you think?
All right, so only because of time. I mean, eventually you get yourself back up into the chair, right?
Yeah. What happened was I had to kick free of it because we couldn't get out, so I had to kick the chair and scoot out on the floor, and then I could eventually get out of it.
See, I am one of the great journalists on the planet. I figured that out all by myself, that you probably weren't still laying on the floor with the Barca lounge.
Yeah.
All right, so at what point do you realize what the subject matter was in your particular situation?
Okay, so then what I'm seeing is that in every one of these situations, everybody keeps saying, in whatever situation, oh, God, right? But they're not saying it the same way. Some people are saying, oh, crap. Some people are saying, oh, darn. Some people are saying, oh, my God. Some people are saying, Jesus Christ.
Right.
In every one of these cases, though, the subject matter is the antecedent to the thing that they're thinking. And the antecedent to all those positions is still unconditionality. Please, regardless of what has happened, regardless of the reason, regardless of what he did, regardless of what he didn't do, regardless of what's going on, regardless of who he is, regardless of what he means, regardless of what's going on under any condition, please, let's have unconditional love in this moment and help us make it through. please be unconditional. If that's the state of things, then I call upon that unconditionality to not make this any worse and to make it the best possible thing that it could possibly ever be.
That's the subject matter?
That's the subject of all subjects.
And that's the subject matter in your situation with your shoulder.
Yeah, but I think overall, right, when I hear all these different deployments of positions, all right, people will eventually say, these are your things that you're using as some sort of an exception to the rule, right? But then even the exceptions for those people who are affected by whatever's going on, they want to rule out even the exceptions, and so they go for the unconditioned. I know that such and such could be this way or it could be that way, but please let it be unconditioned. All right? I know that the identity was this, but let's have a brand new identity. Let's have a reinvention of identity that allows us to be in an unconditioned position such that no matter what has happened before, what is going to happen as of this moment is something that is interdependent with everything else that is good and wholesome and working and operating and unconditioned to any kind of punishment whatsoever. Let's have peace. Let's have grace. Let's let things operate. And it doesn't matter if you believe in God or not, or if you believe in Cracker Jacks or Snap, Crackle, Pop. Doesn't matter. In every case, what people are eventually doing is that the subject matter of all subject matters is that they see from their framework, from their point of view, the necessity in that moment for an unconditioned a position that allows for things to work out. There are those people who might say, for example, well, what about those people who are psychotic and they're looking for things to go completely rail wrong, right? They want things to be totally upside down. Please let me be free of this so that I can go on with my life, even if my life means death. A psychotic person might say that. Right? They're still looking for an unconditioned position to have things righted, but not to be right, but that things can be righted. Unconditioned. And it's a really an amazing thing how when the people get themselves out of the way and they get the abstractions out of the way and they get their expectations out of the way and they allow that things are the way that they are, and they receive what's in front of them as reality, that then they can respond to it. And that response means in an unconditioned way, regardless of what you've done, I'm going to be me. Regardless of how you came at me, I'm not going to take up your anger or your offense. Regardless of how you were ill-meaning towards me, I'm not going to be ill-meaning towards you. I'm going to respond from my center in an unconditioned way, and that's my most healthy position.
Is that how possible is that for a person if they don't see their righteousness as secure as the universe or as secure as creation?
How possible is it?
Yeah. In other words,
if I'm leaning on my own understanding, which I'm asked not to in the Bible, right? Lean not into your own understanding. So if I'm leaning on my own understanding, then I'm going to have to look at things from a position of saying, well, you know, he does this, I do that, he owes me this. When in reality, what people are doing is that they do things like nice things for people in order to get something back.
No, I hear that.
But if it's a giveaway,
but
if it's really you acting freely, then that's exactly what's happening.
Right. But if somebody, right, but if somebody is being toxic towards you.
Yeah.
And the other person that is the target of that toxicity doesn't know that they are perfect, that they are righteous, that they are whole. Is it possible to respond versus react in that situation?
Well, I think that's the whole point, is that when we come to a position of being responsible for our own emotions and we're capable of responding, the position that's the reset position, the what do you call it, the one that you always go back to, your default position, the default position, I think, for the human heart is it's okay. You know? We're human beings, and maybe I don't understand it. Maybe I can't completely comprehend it. But I know one thing. If I'm wounded by what you did already, then you've done all the wounding that you're going to do. I'm free from having to react to you. You don't get all of me. You took that much already, but this part, I'm already free. I'm free from being able, from having to react to what it is that you do or what you've done, so that emotional vampires don't get to suck the lifeblood out of you.
Right. I mean, that's a choice, you guys. Either you get the lifeblood sucked out of you, or you go on.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make a difference if your significant other or friend is being ugly to you, or some crazy person takes your kid out in school.
Yeah.
We all at the end have that choice. And this is it. This is not a dress rehearsal, you guys.
No, it's not.
So, all right, buddy. Well, amazing stuff once again from the intermediator. Take your medicine.
All right, will do.
Keep Glenda in stitches.
Yeah.
And just so everybody knows, the reason that we did the show on Tuesday night is because it is my 53rd birthday tomorrow.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. And I want to take Kimber out for dinner instead of doing the radio show. That's fair, right?
All right, very good.
All right. All right,
take
buddy.
Care of business.
You taking care of business. You take care of business.
Love you, man.
Love you, too.
Bye, buddy.
There he goes. Chris Harrington, the intermediator, on the mend with some pretty profound thoughts on this Tuesday night edition of The Good News on One Klein Online. Sean Edge, thank you. Much appreciated for everything you do.
Shalom, everybody.
All right, we'll talk to you. Oh, no, we're going to take next week off, aren't we? We're taking next week off for Christmas, and then we'll be back after the first of the year, unless the Mayans are right, the planets are done as of Friday. Merry Christmas, happy Hanukkah, happy Kwanzaa, happy Festivus. Until next time, this is Glenn Klein Online. Sean, give it up one more time. Say it, baby.
Shalom, everybody.